Hello and welcome to the Harrogate Podcast with me, Andrew Gray. Join the Harrogate Podcast. It's my job to interview and deconstruct the movers and shakers in this wonderful Harrogate bubble in which we live and work. And today, ladies and gentlemen, I have a bit of a celebrity, or at least a business celebrity, fresh from winning an award last night, the Business Personality of the Year Award for Yorkshire at the York Press Awards in York. I welcome Michelle Mook. Good morning. Good afternoon, even, Michelle.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Tell us about your personal journey, because it's a great story and my listeners will really want to hear about it.
Oh, well, so yeah, I guess it sort of started probably about 7.5, 8 years ago. I was actually working for an organisation. I wasn't particularly very happy with the organisation. One of the things that really helped me was I was actually having some coaching. I was doing a coaching qualification at the time, so I had some coaching of my own. And one of the things that we surfaced through the coaching was my values and the things that really mattered to me. And the things that were coming out were things around making a difference. One of my big values is playfulness, having fun. And I realised that that's why I was really unhappy in my organisation. I wasn't making a difference and I wasn't having any fun. So a tough decision, but made the decision to leave the organisation and set up my own business, which was scary. Quite brave, I think, at the time. Not particularly well supported from my husband at the time as well. I was leaving a particularly very good job. However, I also had the opportunity to go and have a day working with horses. And it was working with the horses that made me realise how important it was to put myself first in this particular situation. So did it, set up the business. 6 months later, my husband left. That was quite tough.
I bet.
Yeah. However, I think in hindsight, I look back and I think it was what was meant to happen for lots and lots of reasons. So, yeah, 7.5 years later, I have the most amazing team. So, you know, I've gone from working on my own in the back of my garage. I'd left Sue, who worked with me at the previous company. I left her there on the basis I'd come back and save her. So a year later, I went and got her and she joined me. And now we're a team of 5. And as you say, got some fantastic clients. We've got an office in York. And yeah, it's going really well.
And every time I've met you, you have that big, wonderful smile that you have on your face now when you talk about your business. It's been a huge success. I remember seeing you speak at the Harrogate Chamber of Trade about a year and a half ago or so. And you blew the room away. You had everyone standing on their, almost on the chairs, I seem to think, or something on the lines. And it was memorable. And you have a memorable name and a memorable way of delivering your message. And let's get into your message. And before we start this podcast, I was asking you, what's the definition of a good boss and a bad boss? You know, could you give us your insight, you know, with your years' experience and your specialism in the sector? Describe to us a bad boss and how you go about making them into maybe better boss.
Yeah, it's interesting actually, even just using the term bad boss, because In our experience, most of the bosses, it's just that they just haven't had any opportunity to develop. So we're working with lots of small, medium-sized businesses in Yorkshire, and what we're finding is that people are working in businesses, they're doing really well, they're really valued, so the company promote them and say, oh great, you can manage this team now, and it's seen as such a great thing for the person, it's career progression. But then it's almost as if there is a magic wand that then makes them a great manager. And of course they've probably been a great salesperson or a great lawyer or a great accountant. Suddenly they're then managing and leading a team, and it is like a blank sheet of paper. People don't know where to start, and I think that's part of the problem. So I don't know whether it's so much bad bosses. I think it's often just, as with anything really, when you don't sometimes know what you don't know. And sometimes I think people are then leading maybe in a way that they've been led, and that might not equally have been a great experience for them. So, yeah, I think the key with the leadership is to have some time to focus on development. I'm not saying there aren't bad bosses out there. I'm sure we have all had one of those. I myself have had one in the past. But when I look back now, I do think a lot of it is probably lack of knowledge, lack of experience, lack of understanding around how to tackle it and how to start.
Okay, and how to start then? So would a manager, a newish manager, should they be asking for training, or it should be their bosses that are putting them on training? Who normally makes that sort of decision?
Yeah, I guess both, really. We've all got a responsibility for our own development. We've got a big belief in that. And certainly with all our clients that we work with, we encourage them to create an environment where people do take responsibility for their own development. It's really, really important. So yes, we have a responsibility to ask if we feel like we need development. But equally, I think what we're finding frustrating is, particularly in SMEs, and a great example is, there was some research came out recently, the only 17% of SMEs invest in any kind of leadership and management development.
Okay.
So equally as businesses, we have a responsibility to develop our people and to make sure that we are creating an environment that allows people to be their best, allows them to play to their strengths, allows them to develop and grow, and provide opportunities to help them with that. And I think one of the sticking points we're finding is people don't see it as an investment, they're seeing it as a cost. But it is an investment, and ultimately, certainly through the employee engagement work that we do, we see so many businesses who will reap the benefits of that if they invest in their people.
Could you give us some examples of when your team's work has really made a difference?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I said earlier, it's one of our big values. So we will often say to clients, new clients, you know, we will only work with them if we feel we can make a difference with them. A great example is a company we've been working with now for probably about 6 years. They originally came to us because they had a few issues in their team. There's a bit of conflict. There was some probably a bit of lack of direction in terms of the leadership. And they really wanted some help. So every year they have really committed to doing an employee engagement survey, a staff survey. And their survey allows their team to have a voice confidentially and say exactly how they feel, what's working, but equally what might be getting in the way. And I think what's been really fantastic about this company is they have absolutely worked on the action plan that we build with them. So after every survey that we do, we actually build an action plan with the client for the year ahead. They have been relentless at implementing that action plan. And every year their engagement has gone up and up, and they've gone from pretty much being around the average in the UK is around 59% engaged,
okay,
which is not brilliant. We've got something like 30 million employees in the UK and only a third are engaged. There was some research recently from Engage for Success, which is not great. But they're now 5 years along the journey of doing their surveys. They're at 96% engagement, which is an absolute incredible score, and hugely down to them absolutely implementing the plan.
With you steering it somewhat.
Yeah, supporting them. And some, you know, some clients we work with, there might actually be a lot of things on the plan that they can do themselves. But if they need support and help, we're there to do that if we can. But what we do is act as a conscience to them throughout the year, so making sure that they are implementing the actions.
That's a great example. A company going from 59%-ish to 96% in, 6 years? That seems utterly incredible to me.
Yeah,
well done to everybody. But what has that done, though, to that company? Without giving anything confidential away, like, I'm sure you wouldn't anyway, but, you know, has turnover increased profitability? Are staff leaving in fewer numbers?
Yeah.
Well, how's it worked for them?
All of those things. And I think that's what's really great about them. One of their biggest challenges when we first went to them was retention. So they were getting lots of people in, but then they were losing them really quickly. So what they've got now is a really solid, stable workforce. They don't have hardly any people leave at all. And if people go, it's for the right reasons. Their turnover has seen a significant increase, pretty much nearly doubled in that period of time. But actually, one of the things that's really lovely about there is when you walk into their offices, 5-6 years ago, you could cut the atmosphere with a knife. You felt the disengagement in the business. You walk in there now and it is the most amazing place to walk into. The energy is really great. People are really happy. And actually, people, when we interview people, they talk about they love their job. They absolutely love working for that company. They've seen huge benefits in so many different things. And interestingly, the leadership team are probably a lot happier as well, because they've got a workforce who are doing and working for them and with them rather than against them. So, yeah, so many benefits in so many places.
Thank you. So when you're working with businesses and with your own business, Do you focus on values? Is that your thing?
It's one of the things, yeah. Okay. So values and culture are really core to employee engagement. And there's 10 key drivers that we look at when we look at employee engagement, of which values and culture is one of them. It is really important. I always say some of the kind of foundations for really great engagement in a business are, I always say it's likening it to a bit like a bus. You know, if you want people to get on your bus, they need to know where they're going. And a lot of businesses that we work with struggle. They haven't got a clear vision. People in the business don't know where it's going. And people rarely will get on a bus if they don't know where it's going. You might get an odd thrill seeker who will jump on for the ride. But most people want to know, where's this bus going? And then equally, how are they contributing to that? What difference they're making towards that vision? And then your values are almost like, when you get on the bus, this is how it's going to be. This is how we want to be together. This is how we're going to work together to make it a great place to work. So those two things coupled together, a vision with some really good values, make a huge, huge difference.
I was reading a newspaper article recently about the cost to employers when a member of staff leaves. I think in law firms, it was about 30,000, I think. By engaging with Pro Development, your company, will SMEs then, you would think, see a reduction in those costs of hiring, firing, redundancies, all that?
Totally. And it's not just our research. I mean, I'm really lucky. I'm part of Engage for Success, which is a huge national, well, UK movement that's looking at how to raise engagement across the UK. And it's actually becoming quite a concern for the UK, particularly with Brexit and all the other things that potentially are going to happen. There's a lot more talk now about productivity and the concern that the UK is really lagging behind in productivity compared to particularly the other G7 countries. So it is something we really need to get a handle on, and employee engagement is definitely something that is connected really strongly with lack of productivity or increased productivity. So in terms of research, there's things around profit. Basically, will definitely increase where you've got highly engaged teams. You look at productivity goes up, you see rises in customer satisfaction, because ultimately, and you know, again, it's kind of not rocket science, if your people are really engaged, they're going to really care about your customers, they're going to want to give them a really great service. And we've all been probably on the other side of that, where we've had the person who clearly isn't engaged and doesn't give us a great experience as a customer. There's definitely a research around people being more innovative and creative when they're more engaged, because I guess they know where the business is going, and so they're going to have all that energy and excitement about different ideas and things they can bring to the business as well. Sickness goes down. That's costing the UK economy about £17 billion a year. So there's so many different factors that are showing that where you can increase engagement in a business, you will absolutely see an increase in your bottom line as well. And we're seeing that with all the clients that we're working with, where they implement the action plan. And that is the key. And we always say to clients who are considering going on an employee engagement journey, and it is a journey, it's not a kind of one-hit wonder, is only do it if you are prepared to take action off the back of it. Because if you do a survey and you ask people, you know, what is it we can change to make this a better place to work, and then you do nothing, you'll have the reverse effect. You'll see more disengagement. So it is about really implementing and investing in that action plan. And sometimes the things on that might cost nothing, but sometimes there might be some investment to make as well.
Thank you. Now, Michelle, I understand that you are the chair of York Professionals.
Yes.
And I suspect you are a very, very astute networker. What tips would you have for Harrogate-based businesses and how they deal with networking? Should they go? How should they prepare? Which one should they go to? Yeah. There are lots of networks around here.
There are. I think across Yorkshire as a whole, there's so many. It's really interesting. In the award that I just won, one of the things that I talked about was networking, and how actually in my early days of setting up the business, it saved me. Not so much in terms of necessarily winning me business directly in the early stages, but in building some really fantastic networks and relationships of people of whom have supported me, have become suppliers, who we work with and collaborate with. So for me, I think one of my biggest tips for networking would be, don't go networking to find clients. Go networking to build really great, strong relationships. Therefore, just popping in and out of networking doesn't work. It is about being there for the long haul and building those relationships. And at the awards ceremony last night, just actually in that room, the amount of support I had for the award was, I think, because of the networking I've done over the last 7 years and friendships that I've built through that as well. So
we were going to come on to the award, but you've mentioned it. And my understanding is, so I know some people who were there as well last night, is that when your name was announced as the winner of Business Personality of the Year, the room just erupted. It wasn't just a few people clapping and so on. It was there's a lot of love in the room for you. Is that right?
Yeah, and it was actually really lovely because I wasn't expecting to win. The other shortlisted candidates were amazing. I know both of them, and they were brilliant. And I felt I was in great company in terms of who else was shortlisted. So my team made a huge amount of noise, as you can imagine. But actually, what was really lovely was the so many people who were clearly supporting me and sending me messages afterwards and coming to see me at the event. And yeah, the actual presenter of the awards commented on how much noise there was, and it was quite funny. His first question was, there's clearly a lot of love for you in the room. Why do you think that is? And I think my answer was, I don't know. So not very eloquent when I was up there getting the award.
Understandable. Tell us about your team. You've mentioned them a lot and you're very passionate about them, given what you do and, you know, your people-based business. You've got a team of 5, I think,
yeah,
and growing, great. I think. Oh, yeah, tell us who these personalities are, these lucky people to work with you.
Yeah, well, they're amazing. And actually, last night when I was getting the award, I was getting that award for all of us because I would not have been Business Personality of the Year without them, that's for sure. For lots of reasons, actually, as well. They, in the early days, you know, certainly when I was setting up the business, Sue, who has pretty much been with me for the majority of that journey, is a really good friend as well, and she scooped me up in when I was going through difficult times, certainly through the divorce. She was a massive support. And what actually I really love about Sue is we are complete opposites and we really value our differences. And it's interesting when we talk a lot with teams as well, we see that where people have stopped valuing their differences or they don't understand what their differences are. And Sue and I really play to each other's strengths. And so that's been a great relationship from you know, pretty much from the outset. We've then had Steph who joined us. Steph is the one that basically kept us on the straight and narrow. Steph's been amazing. She's still with us now as well and is a great support behind the scenes helping us. And then in more recently, Cass, who is somebody I worked with interestingly years and years ago, she came to join us to help support, again, more behind the scenes. And Vicky joined us as another learning and development consultant, and she's amazing. Having run her own business for 7 years as well, she's been a fantastic member of the team to join. And so, yeah, I feel very fortunate to have such a fab team.
And I'm sure they're fortunate to have you as their leader as well. And I suppose in your world, it's actually a fairly sizable company you've got, actually, because most people, I would have thought, in this sort of space that you're in, tend to work on their own, maybe, or with a couple of people. To have 5 in 7.5 years, you know, coming off the back of a recession as well, is incredible. I mean, in this 7.5 years, you must have made some great decisions and some poor decisions.
Yeah,
could 100%. You give us some ideas, if you can, of the best and the worst bits, so we don't make the same mistakes that you made.
Yeah, and I'm always happy to share them. But certainly when new people set up businesses, people will often say, oh, go and talk to Michelle, because I will be really honest with people about the mistakes I've made and then the successes as well. It's interesting, the first, I do always say to people, the first 2 or 3 years, it is about really sticking it out, because I do think that a lot of businesses in the early stages, if you're trying to work with other businesses, certainly there is a little bit of wait and see. I think so many companies come and go in the early stages. I definitely felt with us, it was that kind of, are they going to be here for the long haul? And I think particularly because of the nature of work we're in, you're building trust and relationships with people, it is going to take a little bit of time to do that. So I think probably one of my biggest tips would be persistent, don't give up, just keep going. Probably one of the hardest decisions I had to make was the growing. So having been working from the back of the garage, Sue and I were working in there, but as we made that decision that we needed to grow, come with that growth included we needed to get an office space. So suddenly I went from being two of us with Steph supporting us to having an office and then another two people. So my overheads tripled in fact, because I doubled my team and then took on an office space as well. It was a really good decision. It was a tough one and a brave one, but I think the thing I learned from that and the mistake I made was underestimating how much time it would take to actually set all of that up and to get everybody settled in and to recruit, the amount of time it takes to recruit people. And in that period of time, definitely my focus was then not on business development and networking. So I think that was definitely a mistake that I would never make again now. It's so important to keep your eye on that, leads that are coming in, your future clients, and really making sure you've got that kind of pipeline of work and that it's constant, that you don't take your eye off that. So a big learn. We got through that and have come out the other side, and now it feels like we're getting that snowball effect now. We've got a great team in place, everybody's got clear roles and responsibilities, and we're all kind of on it, all over it, and focused on it all the time, which is making a big difference. So yeah.
And I suspect your business has a plan, and would you tell us, if you would, where you're going to be in 5 years' time according to your plan? I'm seeing growth into other regions is what I'm expecting you to tell me.
Yeah, and it's interesting actually, because that isn't part of our plan. So our vision has always been to be the go-to employee engagement and development people in Yorkshire. And my heart is absolutely in Yorkshire. I'm from here. I love being here. And actually have no aspirations to grow beyond Yorkshire at this moment in time, definitely. So we feel like in certain parts of Yorkshire, we've definitely got a fantastic name. And we just want to keep strengthening that now. So growing, definitely. Potentially, we're looking at possibly taking a property where we've got some land. We do lots of experiential learning, so outdoor learning. So that would be fantastic if we could get to a place where we had our own place where we could do some of that as well.
Tell us more about that type of learning. I can't even say the word experiential.
Yeah. So I think particularly if you're using leadership and management, which we talked about earlier as an example, I think we can all sit in a room and in a classroom and talk about what it is to be a leader, how to manage people. But we know in reality how people lead and manage can often be quite different to what they might say. And so we run a 7-month programme, for example, which is 7 workshops, 7 one-day workshops over 7 months. The idea being that we are taking leaders and putting them into experiential situations where they're leading and managing in a very different way. So it might be, for example, working with horses. It might be working on a lake, building a raft. It could be in a cookery school. All sorts of different things. But ultimately, what we're looking at doing is they're working with other leaders and managers, leading and managing that team, and getting really honest feedback from each other on what they're doing that's great and what they might be doing that is getting in people's way. And through that programme, which we couple with coaching, so we do coaching to run alongside it, we're seeing some huge transformational changes in people, which is a real pleasure and honour to be part of people's journey. Last night at the awards, one of the companies that we work with won Large Company of the Year, so a company called Intelsius, which was fantastic to see them do so well. But one of their managers who came on our programme wrote to us only quite recently. She came on it 2 years ago just to say how much that programme changed her whole life, not just her work life, but also her personal life as well, because ultimately she was taking charge and leading her life So leadership isn't just about leading people, it's about leading yourself, leading others, leading clients, leading suppliers, leading in all aspects of your life. So
changing tack somewhat, when you're feeling low, if you ever feel low, and I can't imagine you ever feeling low, but if you were to feel gloomy and maybe you lost a client or something didn't go so well, or I don't know, I mean, who do you turn to? Are there any podcasts or books? You know, what sustains Michelle?
It's interesting because I'm quite a, I get my energy from being around people. I'm, in Myers-Briggs terms, I'm a high E, which is all about getting my energy from being around others. But yeah, I do know I need my downtime. I need time sometimes to be on my own. I love watching films. Films is a bit of escapism, I think, for me as well.
Do you have
sometimes
a favourite? And is it going to be embarrassing?
Probably the girly chick flicks and the usual things, really. Yeah, so but actually, in terms of who I turn to, the team, you know, we, one of the things that I think is really important with a team is that you can be really authentic and honest and yourself. And we always say this in our team is we all have bad days and we all have good days. And if you're having a bad day, you should all be able to support each other. And, you know, I'm not a big believer in you bring your work head to work and you, and when you're at home, you're a different person. I think you're always your best when you can be yourself. And so we all have conversations when we're feeling bad or we've had a bad day. We support each other and we help each other. And then we celebrate in the good times with each other as well. But I also am a huge believer in getting support. And I also have my own coach that I work with. An amazing guy who you've interviewed, Stuart Wright. I work with Stuart, and again, I think it's important for all of us to have that somebody who can be that conscience for us and support when we're trying to grow a business.
And when I've interviewed people like Stuart, they tend to have a pretty fixed routine. You know, waking up at early o'clock and eating avocados, meditating, gratitude journals, all that stuff. And I'm not laughing at it, but I wonder whether you have anything like that. I'm gonna guess not, and that's not a criticism. You just seem like you would not require a routine to do what you do, to be who you are. I mean,
yeah, it's interesting. It's something Stuart and I explore a lot, because Stuart is definitely, he has some amazing routines, but he's actually very planful, and I, my sort of natural style is being quite spontaneous. So although I'm great at having plans, I'm very much more live in the here and the now. So I do have some routines, and I do try and get up early. I always try and catch up on my emails and things so that I'm kind of starting my day well. But I wouldn't say I have any really kind of strong routines. I make time every week for networking. I make time every week for my team. I make time every week for my strategic partnerships and the people who I work really well with and alongside. So I have certain sort of blocks of time that I tend to focus on. But yeah, I wouldn't say I've got rigid routines or anything. I've also got two boys, two teenage boys, so routine doesn't always work when you have teenagers in your house.
I imagine it's taxiing them around a lot is part of the routine.
Yeah.
You touched on emails. Do you batch them in the morning, or do you just read them as and when? I mean, do you get so many that you get overwhelmed like I do? Or?
Oh, yeah. I think email is, interestingly, in employee engagement, when we're doing employee engagement work, email is nearly always coming up as a real issue for people that they just can't keep on top of it. I try not to get distracted by emails. I try to read them in blocks of time. So I think I am somebody who can easily be distracted. So I have to force myself to just look at emails at certain points in the day. I'm not rigid in, I know again, some people will read them only in the morning and only at night. I'll read them at certain points throughout the day, particularly because of the nature of our work. We're often getting things through that might be important to work where completing as well. But so yeah, try not to get too driven by email, because I think our work can become very focused by what comes in our inbox if we're not careful.
Agreed with that. Now, I run a boring law firm. And I imagine there's lots of other boring businesses out there as well. And you've mentioned fun, that you bring fun somehow to the workplace. Like, how on earth could you bring fun to a law firm or another boring business?
Ah, well, we work with lots of law firms who have fun, and accountants. You know, it's interesting when you go networking how many accountants say, oh, I'm just an accountant. And I think we work with some fantastic companies who have lots and lots of fun in how they do things. I think it's about understanding what fun looks like for the people who are working with you, and having those conversations. One of our clients has got a fun committee, so they've actually given a budget to these group of people who take it in turns to run the fun committee, where they'll try and do things to, you know, lighten things at work. You know, my sort of view is we spend so much time at work. If we can't have some fun, then it's kind of a dreary old day. But I don't think you can prescribe it as such. I do think it's got to come from the people within your business. I mean, we have fun. We have a company song sometimes. So we'll, just for no particular reason, have a sing song.
Could you sing it for us?
Yeah, no. I've got two teenagers who tell me constantly that I can't sing. So yeah, we might have sometimes we've got up and had a dance. We might do some fun things out of work as well. I do think one of the things that we see a lot of with companies is not taking time out together in work time. It tends to be in the evenings or at weekends, and that doesn't work for everybody. If people have families, they've got commitments, it can often make some people feel excluded. So I would really encourage companies to think about what they can do to bring their people together in a fun way, but in a way that learns as well. So, for example, we hear lots of people who'll go and do some fun thing. They might go and spend a day doing raft building or something, for example. And it's often a massively missed opportunity to learn as well. So I always say, if you're going to do something, make sure it's got some outcomes as well. Make sure you've got some clear outcomes. Is there a problem you're trying to fix with it? Rather than just going off and having a fun day, do something that's going to be meaningful and that will help you as a team to build and bond and work better together in the future.
Michelle, I'm guessing that you come up against a lot of resistance from SME owners and managers within SMEs about engaging with you. They might think what you do is a bit woo-woo, a bit out there. You know, they might regard themselves as perfect. Why do they need to change? How on earth do you deal with people like that who perhaps think, you know, I'm pretty good, I'm pretty capable, everything's going okay-ish for me.
Yeah, yeah.
What on earth could Michelle and her team teach me?
It is a really interesting question, actually, because we do definitely come across that. And, you know, sometimes we come across some companies where I've had a conversation once with somebody where they said, well, why would I need to engage my people? If they don't like it, they can just leave,
ooh,
can't they?
Ooh.
And I think, well, yes, absolutely, and they will. And so we won't crack everybody, I do know that. But equally, there are plenty of people out there who I think know that potentially that there's something missing, that there's something more they could be doing. And it's those companies probably we really want to work with, and the ones that really care about their people and know that actually they will make the difference. And it isn't woo-woo or pink and fluffy, as I know some people think. It's actually black and white. You know, it will make more money for you. So one of the things that we do to help with this is we run a workshop once a month. So as part of my role in Engage for Success, which I mentioned earlier, it's a completely voluntary organisation or movement. But to help support that, I run a workshop once a month where I don't charge my time. We just charge £30 to cover the cost of the room and a bit of lunch afterwards. And I run a workshop just to help raise awareness, really, to share what is employee engagement, how do you take somebody from being disengaged to being actively engaged and really helping drive and support your business. And at the end of that workshop, business owners, HR professionals, business leaders leave that workshop with an action plan where they commit to doing two or three things differently when they go back. And if they go and do that, then happy days. You know, I know that will go and make a difference. And sometimes we then work with that client as well. But those workshops are always available on our website. So anybody's welcome to come along to them. You just need to spare us your time from 9 till 12 once a month, just to come along to one of those workshops and find out a bit more and go away with some great ideas.
That's a fantastic offer, and I think that's probably the first offer I've ever had on the Harrogate podcast. So thank you for that. I'm sure it's not just for those who listen to this podcast. You touched upon types of clients, but you don't. Is there a type of Michelle client that, you know, everyone should be looking out for and say, ah, they should go and speak to Michelle at Pro Development? Or is it almost any business?
Well, we work with them. And one of the things we love, actually, is the breadth of clients that we have. So our kind of stipulations are be in Yorkshire and the Humber, because that's where we want to work. You know, we're not looking for world domination, just Yorkshire domination. and a client who employs people. So our smallest client's got about 7 employees. And then we're working with bigger clients that are, you know, employing hundreds. So anywhere really in there, and from accountants and solicitors to children's nurseries to manufacturing companies, turf companies, packaging companies, you know, really, really varied. We work with a theatre. So, yeah, and the more different companies that we love, the better. It makes our role really interesting. And it, actually, the challenges that all of those organisations have are all very, very similar, just a different environment that they're in.
Super. Now, Michelle, how do people contact you? How do they find you online and so on?
Yeah, well, you can ring us anytime. So you can find our number on our website, which is www.pro-development.co.uk. So you can go and find out more about us on our website. We also do a weekly blog on there that have lots of really great tips. So I would recommend have a scoot through our blogs as well and see if there's some good ideas on there. We do a monthly newsletter with, again, sharing lots of hints and tips. So anybody can subscribe to that. Or you can just drop us an email. So,
and yeah. LinkedIn. You are very good on LinkedIn,
yeah.
It has to be said.
And my team are really challenging me. I've started to do some video LinkedIn messages to people, which we're getting a good response from. I'm trying to share a bit more. So the team are challenging me to do more of those. So, yeah, absolutely, happily link in with me. And, yeah, and I always, always got time for a coffee.
Michelle, it's been my pleasure interviewing you. Good luck for the future and helping out all those thousands of people, I suppose, around Yorkshire.
Thank you for your time. Thank you very much.